powered through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by Mazda of Everett. Jake, before we bring on our guests, when you look at this series coming up against the A's, who do you hope takes off? Like, who would genuinely we're down bad as Mariners fans.
I would say Jesse Winker. Jesse Winker's the name that I've been talking about for all season long. That's right. The person that I would love to see take off.
All right, to help us preview this series, let's bring on Eno Saris of The Athletic. Eno, how's it going?
Going great. I can see how it might be a little tough on Mariners fans, right?
I thought you were going to say, how are you guys? And then stopped yourself because you were like, the answer is bad. The answer is in pain because, you know.
We're in a dark place, look, you know, right
now. You know, we both started the season with very different expectations. And yet here we are finding ourselves in the same place. But that's okay. It certainly makes this series interesting. But I wanted to talk a bit about what the A's plan is. What has this offseason been like?
You know, they might be close to each other in the stands, but I would be much more hopeful about the Mariners' future than I am about the A's, because they really just torched the ground, and they did it in a way that they've never done it before. Because in the past, Billy Beane has sold players and he has done a mini rebuild, but usually he'll spend some of his money and try to be competitive in any given season. He traded away a bunch of players and still signed Yoenis Cespedes that one year and won the division. This year they are spending $40 million on a roster that frankly just looks horrible. And I'm sorry, it's one of the worst teams I've ever had to cover, ever been around, and I think that there will be a major difference in the standings going forward, given that quality of talent.
I'm really curious about your thoughts on the Mariners, but I do want to ask you one more question about the A's. Is, you know, you say that it's more different than anything that you've seen before that they have done, but what exactly does that make you think? I know that there's a lot of controversy between the organization and the city. Is this more of a next step that the organization is making and saying, all right, we're going to make the product not as good as well, and maybe that will help us get what we want?
Yeah, you know, when I pressed that question to Dave Cavill, he says, oh, well, we have the approval to go to Vegas, so we don't need to make it worse here. But I'm sorry, you know, that's a little different. Approval is different than sort of PR work and what the perception is. And I think it would be better for the A's if everyone thought, oh, this can't work in Oakland, you know? And for that, you know, empty seats helps make that point. You know, now everyone thinks, oh, gosh, Oakland, the fans don't turn out and it's not a good city for baseball. But they raised season ticket prices. They canceled a popular ticket program. They've closed concession stands and craft beer stands, and they've made going to the park not fun. And so I know a lot of season ticket holders who are like, you know, I'm not going right now. I love the A's, but I don't love the way they're being run. And I think it is partially to make it look like baseball can't work in Oakland.
Do you think, when you talk to fans, do they feel like the team's being, that their team in fandom is being like held hostage almost?
100%. And they know that the goal is a stadium, and that the ownership doesn't actually care that much if it's a stadium in Oakland or if it's a stadium in Vegas. And, you know, fans care a lot if it's in Oakland or in Vegas. So they're not really happy with the whole situation. And, you know, I just don't want a fan shame because, I know them, and it's not that fans don't turn out in Oakland. It's that ownership hasn't really given them a reason to.
Now, going to the Mariners, obviously, you know, Stacy had outlined that we had high expectations here in Seattle, a lot of excitement, a lot of expectation. How have you evaluated what has transpired with this Mariners team to start the season, and is now an appropriate time to be, if not hitting the panic button, to be, hovering right over that panic button?
I don't know. I mean, I see a lot of things that are going right. I mean, I think, you know, from the metrics I look at, this bullpen is amazing. It has some really great young talents they're going to have for a while in it. I look at that rotation. I see Logan Gilbert and Kirby, and, you know, they look like, you know, they're excellent pitchers, you know, and they've supplemented that with some veterans. I don't really have an answer for you. I know in the past they've sort of overperformed, and maybe this is just a karmic god saying, hey, you used to do so well in one-run games, now we're going to zap you. But I think when I look at this team, I'm excited about it. There's a lot of talent here. I think a couple guys need to turn around. A couple guys need to get healthy. But I don't see a fundamental flaw or problem with this team.
You know, I obviously want to continue talking about the Mariners. I know you cover the AL West and MLB kind of at large, too. So you may not have been there, but maybe the most important question I'll ask you today is, were you in the media booth when the possum came down from the ceiling?
I was not. I was there the next night.
God. Okay, I was hoping to get some insider behind-the-scenes info here.
That would have freaked me out because I think possums are gross. I think rats are gross and possums are just bigger rats.
That's exactly right.
That would have just freaked me out.
We had so many people. I was saying that. I was like, I don't want a rodent climbing into the press box. And people were like, actually, Stacey, it's a marsupial. And I was like, okay, either way, I don't want it anywhere near. I don't want it anywhere near me when I'm trying to work. It can stay outside. It is a really fascinating situation in Oakland, though, because it's, again, it's kind of like it's fitting covering it after the CBA negotiations because there's always this kind of business of baseball angle that you're looking at and that I know many writers and people covering the sport feel passionate about when it comes to talking about that, too, is it's not just talking about teams and just talking about the league. It's also talking about relationships between teams and cities or owners and fans. And Oakland kind of encapsulates a lot of that right now and some of the not so great parts of it. How do you see this organization moving forward? Like, what do you think happens?
You know, and it's also really difficult for me as an analyst. I hear close to the numbers, and there's a great researcher out there, J.C. Bradbury, the professor of economics, who's basically shown that giving teams a lot of money to build ballparks mm-hmm. is not in the best interest of the communities that do so. It doesn't create all the wealth that teams say it does. And so I don't want Oakland to spend a bunch of money they don't have on this A's stadium. But at the same time, I see the waterfront there, Howard Terminal. I like Jack London Square. I think there's a possibility they could create a waterfront atmosphere for Oakland and create, you know, a destination type of, you know, kind of a city waterfront area that people would come to from miles away to see. So I hope that it works out in Oakland. And I know that things seem to be kind of gaining steam towards an Oakland solution, but it's always in the details. It's always how much money does this billionaire get from the community in order to make his stadium. So I know that Vegas will probably pony up more than Oakland. If it comes down to that, they'll get a team.
You know, how shocking has it been to see the Angels do what they're doing right now? I mean, you know, this has been a team that's always been confusing as to, you know, the type of team that they put together. Good lineup, bad pitching, that's been the main story for them, but their lineup right now has been sensational. I mean, Taylor Ward is hitting .370 for crying out loud and hitting 9 home runs. I mean, it's just been unbelievable on top of Mike Trout and Ohtani and Rendon. Do they have the capability to continue this start that they've gotten out to?
I think so. One thing I worry about is back end pitching depth. You know, when the pandemic came down, most teams, you know, the Mariners treated their coaches and their minor leaguers pretty well. And most teams felt badly for the minor leagues when there were no minor leagues. And so they tried to keep their player development system going. The Angels, on the other hand, furloughed all of their coaches and didn't pay their minor leaguers. And, you know, it set them back when it comes to player development. I'm kind of surprised by Ward popping out of this, but he's, you know, like 28, 29 year old who's, I think, just gone at it himself and developed himself in a way. So when you really start to see it is in August when the pitchers get hurt. What kind of pitchers will they call up to replace the hurt pitchers? Mm-hmm. And I think what you're seeing in Seattle is, you know, they've invested in their player development. Their player development is doing pretty well. And when they need young pitchers, at least they go down and get them. And here they are, and they're ready to go. I mean, you know, maybe Brash didn't work out, but the other two are doing pretty well. So I think that's the one Achilles heel for the Angels will be what happens when their starters get hurt and who will they go to?
For your latest column in The Athletic, you looked at just where the new pitching ranks are right now, kind of who's at the top of the league, who's falling down, who's rising. I have just kind of a tangentially related question, which is in looking at the pitching ranks and looking at how pitchers from across MLB have done this year, are you as just surprised, dumbfounded by how great pitching is and how difficult offense can be for teams around the league right now?
Yeah, that's, you know, that's one of the things that we talk about when we talk about, you know, the strikeout rate in baseball. It's never been higher. And what do we do about the sport? And it's too many strikeouts in the sport. Well, you know, one of the things is we've got this, you know, like I said about player development, we've got these pitch designers in every team now. And so they've scienced up, you know, okay, if you add an inch of ride here or you add an inch of drop here to this pitch, it'll be so much better. And so you can actually look at the effect of pitch design over the last 4 or 5 years and see that some of the strikeout rate is just due to better coaching of the pitching and the better data and technology leading to better pitching. So, you know, that's one thing. Like, I have a number called Stuff, which kind of looks at the physical properties of a pitch. And most teams in baseball have a Stuff number, and they know how to try and improve a pitcher's Stuff based on that Stuff number. So, you know, when Brash came up, they said he had a 190 Stuff plus on his slider. I had a very similar number. So, you know, in his case, it was the command that didn't work out. And that's something that you're seeing across baseball too. Command is not as emphasized. Mm-hmm. But it was pretty exciting when Brash was going good, wasn't it?
No, yeah, yes. No kidding. All right, last question here for you, Eno. Just looking at just tonight's pitching matchup, you got Marco Gonzalez, who is more of a command pitcher for Seattle, against Zach Logue. Tell us what we can expect from him.
Yeah, Loesch is a guy that they picked up from Toronto in the Matt Chapman trade. He's going to come at you with a lot of deception, a funky arm angle. He's kind of a side armer, so you can get kind of weird shapes out of that side arm position. But the right-handers should be able to see him well. So if you're making a pick on tonight's game, pick a right-hander, should be able to see that slot pretty well and maybe do some damage. I love Marco Gonzalez. I just love the sort of four-pitch mix with great command, keeping everybody on their back heel. He also, I think, leads the league in decisions ever since he got to Seattle. They let him go deep into the games, which is not something you see across the league. He can go six or seven and give it to the late guys in the bullpen. So I think it's going to be a Mariners win, but we'll see. The A's have been surprisingly not as bad as I thought they'd be.
It's going to be fascinating to see these two clubs just at an interesting spot. Your coverage, by the way, has been phenomenal at a time when I know many A's fans are frustrated, but it's also kind of just an objectively interesting time from the outside looking in. So he is Eno Saris of The Athletic. Make sure you're reading his work at The Athletic. Thanks so much, Eno.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Mazda of Everett. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played
first
the game.
First down, Jake. OTAs start today for the Seahawks. So which Seahawk, one player, has the most to gain?
The one that has the most to gain by far is Drew Lock. Drew Lock, his job is to go into these OTA practices and build on trust. Can he gain trust and can he build upon it throughout these practices? And it's, you know, building trust with his teammates, building trust with his offensive coordinator and Shane Waldron, and building trust in head coach Pete Carroll. He can do that by the way that he shows up to work every single day, being on top of his stuff, knowing the playbook inside and out, being someone that's relied upon. And if a teammate has a question, they feel like they can go to Drew Lock because he's got the answer. You want your quarterback to be that guy. And also, in, you know, not being a repeat offender. If you make a mistake in practice, fine. That's what OTAs is there for, to make mistakes and to learn from them. But can you come back the very next day and build upon and strengthen your weaknesses? The other part of it is how good of a decision maker can he be? Can he protect the football? Can he make savvy decisions in situational football? That's what Pete Carroll is going to be valuing. in this particular quarterback competition with Geno Smith. So Drew Lock has to come in and answer all of those questions, and he can do himself a lot of good if he is able to really build a lot of trust with everyone in that building through his performances at OTAs.
Second down. Jake, you've talked about second-year quarterbacks that you're very intrigued by. You think they're in good situations, primed to take a step forward. I want to go the opposite route now. Who are two second-year quarterbacks in the NFL you're becoming increasingly worried about?
The two that I'm worried about, Justin Fields is someone that I just am worried about the environment that he is in. They've got a new coaching staff, which I like it. Matt Eberflus is a very smart, well-liked, well-respected defensive coordinator. They brought in Luke Getsy, who is, you know, he was an integral part of that coaching staff there with the Green Bay Packers. But in terms of talent, I don't know what they have around Justin Fields that gives you optimism, that gives you hope, that allows you to say, hey, I think Justin Fields could take the next step in year two. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't add up. And you can have great schemes and great coaches, but if you don't have the players, as I've said to you before, it's not about the X's and O's. It's about the Jimmys and Joes. And if you don't have those guys that can help elevate a young quarterback around him, and he's on an island all on his own, it's going to be tough sledding. And you could derail a quarterback early in his career if you're not able to get things on track rather quickly. So I'm worried about Justin Fields. And the other guy that I'm worried about is Mac Jones with the New England Patriots. What's going on with that offensive staff is really disturbing to me. It's very worrisome, and the fact that the offense is being entrusted in Joe Judge and Matt Patricia, two guys that have no history whatsoever in developing quarterbacks, yeah, that concerns me a great deal, because Mac Jones needs to be able to take the next step in year two, and he basically is having to do it without the proper ecosystem around him, without the proper quarterback development around him that has been there with Josh McDaniels for so long. I mean, to me, that is a big problem, and that is something that you have to worry about when it comes to Mac Jones. And quite frankly, the optimism around this team last year was that they may have found their quarterback that can stabilize this team. And if that is not the case, and Mac Jones is derailed in his overall development, you have set this whole thing back for the New England Patriots. And that is a great concern of mine, just simply based off of the staff that they have put around him.
Third down. What players are you most interested in learning about over the OTA period?
Who I'm interested to learn about more in the OTA period is the two tackles, Charles Cross and Abraham Lucas, as they start to go up against NFL edge rushers who know what they're doing. There's going to be a lot of learning moments. There's going to be a lot of growing moments. But can those two find a comfort quickly within this offense? And we hear positive reviews about how they're handling this system and how they're being able to hold their own during the OTA period against some very good edge rushers. The other group that I'm very interested in learning more about is the cornerback group. Last year, the competition did not go well. No one stepped up. No one stepped up to the plate and said, hey, I am going to own this. I am staking my claim on this job, and I am winning this competition. We did not see that happen at all, and that is something that has to change. If you're going to roll the dice again and go with a group that is unproven, that is young, that hasn't really made their mark on this league, then you got to have guys that really take over this competition and show that they are worthy of being the starter entering the season. And I think that Trey Brown is off to a really good foot, really good start when you look at this four games that he played last year and him being healthy to start OTAs. But the other spot, I think, is very much in question. And who is going to step up? Is it going to be Artie Burns? Is it going to be, Kobe Bryant? Is it going to be Sidney Jones? The competition there, you said it was a position that worried you, Stacey, and I think rightfully so, because there's not a lot of proven commodities there. Therefore, you're really relying on competition bringing the best out of that group, and someone has to step up.
Fourth down. All right. There was a bench-clearing brawl in MLB the other day. And as part of a bench-clearing brawl, if there is a brawl, you must clear that bench. You cannot be the only man sitting on the bench. You have to be off of it.
Yes.
It's an unspoken rule of baseball. So, Jake, what are some unspoken rules of football?
Unspoken rules of football is...
And they can vary. From a fan point of view,
it is... I think the number one unspoken rule is you cannot yell if it's your home team that is on offense. You can't yell. You can't make noise. It's got to be quiet. And then when it's the defense on the field, that's when you're yelling. That's when you're trying to make all the noise. That is the, I think, number one spoken rule in fandom. I'm trying to think from a player perspective. The best thing that I can come up with is in practice during the OTA period. Right now, Pete Carroll, what he's talking about with his players is competing at the highest level, but also taking care of one another. What does that mean? Not being reckless when you don't have pads on, because you can't go full speed. You're limited in the contact that you can have, and you're supposed to, and you're trying to keep each other healthy. So when you have guys that, you know, are going a little too hard, it could be a rookie, it could be a player who's trying to prove himself and make a roster spot. When they're not going at the same speed and the same tempo as everybody else, the same rules of engagement, that's how you get people hurt, and that's how, you know, you quickly get labeled as a non-padded warrior, non-padded all-star, and you don't want to be that guy because, trust me, you're going to be getting into a lot of fights.
All right, I want to get back to your question about what we can learn from OTAs, why OTAs are especially important. So what can the Seahawks learn about themselves over the next 3 days? That's next. It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Now, I'm going to ask a question that sounds simple, but just how important are OTAs? And by that, Jake, I mean, what can the Seahawks learn about themselves over the next 3 days? The Seahawks are going to have practices today. Practice has actually already started. It'll be wrapping up here pretty soon. I believe Pete Carroll scheduled to speak around 1:45, same time tomorrow and the day after. So you're going to have 3 days of practice. If you're the Seahawks, you're obviously not going at 100%. This isn't like a padded practice and training camp. So what can you learn about yourself, and how important is it, maybe specifically for the Seahawks?
Well, I think that the big part about this is that this is the first time that you're seeing full-blown OTAs happen, you know, in a number of years because of COVID. And last year, the Seattle Seahawks elected to kind of do a hybrid version of OTAs, where the rookies were there the whole time practicing and doing stuff, where the veterans stayed away for most of the time. And then when they came back, they weren't even really practicing against each other, Stacey. It was more like, you know, individual period the entire time. I mean, it was pretty basic, pretty vanilla. And I think that you've even heard that from Pete Carroll himself. Let's go to cut number 8. This is in January, and him talking about how he's excited to go through a full-blown OTA normal off-season this year.
We kind of did the bare minimum last year in terms of opportunities to get together, and let's just revisit that and what the criteria is, what's going on. Right now, there's a normal OTA season set up, you know, phase 1, 2, and 3, starting April 18th, and so we'll see what that means. I don't know what that means right now, but I asked the guys to really be in communication, and let's make a really good run at understanding what is available. We'll see what happens. I'm wide open for it. I'm anxious to see, you know, what our opportunities are and the options are, and we have a really good leadership group, and we'll figure out how to do that.
So clearly Pete Carroll wanted full-blown OTAs, all right? Hey, we haven't had the chance to do it. Looks like we're going to have the chance to do it now, and I hope as an organization that we make that decision consciously with everybody all hands on deck, and we're moving forward. Why? Well, if you look back at last season, the offense didn't start off the way that they wanted to, and then the defense certainly did not. And go to cut number 9, Bobby Wagner, you know, talking with Mike Salk in April, mentioning the fact that some of the defensive issues could have come from a lack of OTA time together.
You know, we definitely had to communicate better. We definitely had to just execute the scheme, and sometimes the trust wasn't always there. And you think about COVID, you think about all these different things where, you know, normally you get to be around one another and have a, you know, I was talking to Jordan a while ago, and, you know, this might be his first real off season where you have OTAs and everything like that. I think up until this point, he's never had a real off season, you know? So it's like, little things like that do matter, do mean something, I think do play a part.
So, Stacey, you hear that, and obviously you hear the benefits of being able to be around each other and to be able to have more opportunities to be around the coaching staff to build that chemistry and develop it. Mm-hmm. That's the main benefit for this group, and they're extremely young. They are younger than they have ever been.
What are you working on right now? Like, what if you're the Seahawks, you show up, like, what's usually the primary focus of OTAs other than, like, hey, let's go through some drills?
Getting guys familiar with the playbook. That is the main purpose of OTAs, is to go through it as a coaching staff and with the players, and to be able to say, all right, install 1, 2, 3, all the way through maybe 8 or 10 installs, depending on the given team. But, you know, typically you're going to go through those 8 installs and you're going to get through them as a team, you know, anywhere from, you know, you're going to get through them probably about 5 to 6 times.
Is an installs, are those a number of plays or a phase of the playbook?
Those are the plays. That is a phase of the playbook.
Okay.
So not number of plays. Within
right.
within an install, you're talking about maybe, you know, a chunk of, you know, 30 plays that you're installing in one day.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going through those, and then you're installing the next phase and the next phase and the next phase. And so you're going to get through that playbook probably around 6 times through the OTA period. So you've heard those again and again and again, and you add maybe a new variation the next time you go into it. So it's just really getting everybody comfortable with the playbook and then getting out on the field and practicing those plays and getting a chance to develop that chemistry. So that's really the main goal of OTAs during this time. And then training camp is where you start to crank it up. And then now it's about executing and needing to see guys perform at a very high level and, you know, really making your decisions, you know, when it comes to the roster and all that. But this is a time of learning. This is a time of growing and guys trying to stake claims or at least give themselves the inside track on their competitions going into training camp.
You mentioned that Drew Lock had the most to gain from OTAs. I'm sure there are a couple other offensive players that would have a lot to gain. What about a defensive player or two? I know Bobby Wagner, in his interview with Mike Salk, said
yeah.
that someone like Jordan Brooks, who hadn't really had a traditional offseason yet,
mm-hmm.
Him and Darrell Taylor will finally get that. But if you look at the defense, what are one or two players when you say, this is a big week for them?
Well, I would say the cornerback group, first and foremost, the DB group as a whole. Them working with Sean Desai and Carl Scott and working through this new defensive scheme and system, doing that out on the field against live competition, I think that is really important. And then the other one, I would say, you know, from an individual player perspective, would be Boye Mafe. He is a raw talent in the second round who obviously they are extremely excited about. His physical tools jump off the page, and he's very explosive, but he's got a lot to learn to fit into, you know, the type of role that they want him to play. A traditional outside linebacker that did a little bit of rushing and has explosive traits.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're trying to make him a true dynamic pass rusher, and that's a different step. That's a different thing to learn at the NFL level. And so I think that, you know, you talk about one single defender, I think that Boye Mafe has a lot to learn and transition to, you know, trying to become a dynamic pass rusher when he, you know, is coming from a system that was more being a pure outside linebacker.
Pete Carroll is scheduled to speak at 1:45. If he gets to the podium on time, which sometimes doesn't happen because he's coming straight from the practice field, so they break down practice,
mm-hmm.
maybe they do a cheer or whatever, so sometimes it's a little bit later. Should he still be speaking with reporters when we're on air, we'll let you guys know if there are breaking news. But otherwise, you're going to hear some updates from Pete Carroll during Wyman and Bob, which follows us starting at 2 p.m. What are you hoping you hear from Pete Carroll today?
Well, there's nothing that's going to really shock me.
Right. He's not going to be like, so here's the thing. We are working on DK's extension right now.
or the fact that, like, hey, so-and-so is you know, he has won the competition in
right.
day one of phase 3 of OTAs. Like, you're not going to really hear that. But I do think that it'll be interesting to hear who are some standouts that have caught his eye and that has really, you know, made steps forward in terms of taking over the leadership role that has been left open to this organization now that Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner are gone. So who are those voices that are stepping up? Who are those players that are taking that role of making sure everybody is in their spot and everybody knows their responsibilities? I'm going to be curious to hear about that. And then obviously when it comes to the quarterbacks, that's going to be a main topic of conversation. Where does Pete Carroll view this right now with Drew Locke and Geno Smith and Jacob Eason? And I think that that is going to be something to 100% keep your eye on.
All right, very quick roster move here. No additional move. It's just the Seahawks confirming the addition of Marquise Goodwin. Per Bob Condotto of the Seattle Times, he will be wearing number 15 and is officially on the roster as OTAs begin. So once again, Pete Carroll scheduled to speak at 1:45. We are not taking you guys there live. You'll be able to hear updates during Wyman and Bob. We'll let you know if there's breaking news. But otherwise, coming up next, we're going to go this or that. I'm going to go into, like, turn this frown upside down territory with the Mariners-A's series. I'm going to have this or that, all Mariners-A's series version with basically which of these things is most likely. We're going to have fun. We are going to have fun, Jake.
Fun.
I'm saying it to convince you, not myself. We're going to have fun,
Oh,
okay?
Me? Okay.
Yeah, that's
all right.
Next.
This is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, it's what I need to know. No, it's not. We did that on Friday. It's this or that. I'm bouncing back and forth between the two, so I need to remind myself. This or that, brought to you by All Red Heating and Cooling. I'm telling you guys a choice. Now, normally, it runs the gamut. All kinds of choices. I'm keeping this to Mariners A's, all right? It's almost like a version of
okay.
Most likely. So you're going to choose, the two of you, which of these things is going to happen. This or that, Mariners A's series version. The Mariners win. Or the A's win? Keeping it simple off the top.
I'm going to go with the Mariners. I'm going to go with the Mariners win because the alternative is just
too
a place.
Awful to think of.
Yeah, it would just be too dark of a world to live in. So I'm gonna go with the Mariners and really hope that they can bounce back and win this series. Please, for the love that is just, I need it.
Loser tonight is all alone in last place in the AL West. You got to hope that there's some urgency with this Mariners team. Like,
yeah.
Look, guys, mm-hmm. I know we're not in first place right now as we kind of had all hoped they would be.
Yeah.
You can't be in last place. You absolutely cannot be in last place on May 23rd behind the Oakland A's, a team that made no bones about their process that they were going to tank this season.
What if that is
if anything, A's fans are going to be mad.
What if that is the motivational pitch tonight? Guys,
don't be the worst.
Right.
Don't
can't,
do it.
We can't do it.
Don't be the worst. That can be our cheer for everything.
No.
This or that. It's a home run version. Jesse Winker gets a home run or Julio gets a home run.
I have way more confidence that Julio's going to get a home run.
Well, and what we learned from Eno Saris, that he has his bets on a right-hander if there is one to be able to fall for a little less deception.
Yeah. But you know what the weird thing is that Jesse Winker came into the season and, you know, what was the conversation? He can't hit left-handed pitching. He mashes right-handed pitching. And he's actually been okay versus left-handed pitching. So go figure. So I may talk myself into a circle here, but I think that Julio Rodriguez has a better chance of hitting a home run tonight.
Julio, still waiting to hit that home run at T-Mobile, correct?
Correct. Yes. He's got three. All have been on the road.
Could this be it, Curtis?
Yeah, I think there's a much greater chance of him hitting a home run than Jesse Winker. I think...
It's not warm yet. It's not warm yet, people.
Remember... It's so early, guys.
That's right.
It's so early in the season. Talk to me in June.
What's the weather supposed to be tonight? Hold on.
I think it's supposed to be decent rain midweek and then like...
No, I'm talking about tonight.
Well, I'm just saying. I mean, that's how I would give my weather report if I were an official weather person. And to Stacy for the weather. Yeah, it's going to be decent.
Okay, so it's going to be around 60 degrees, drops to, you know, upper 50s. Yeah, I'm gonna go with Julio's power on this one.
This or that listener suggestion from the 253, Mariners Moose versus Stomper, the A's mascot.
He's an elephant in a fight
to the death.
Come on, Moose. Moose.
Dude, moose are some of the most unpredictable animals in the wild.
Yeah.
I want, here's the
thing. It's the moose.
Listen to me.
I don't know.
No, listen. My brain tells me to go with Stomper because Stomper is an elephant. However, Stomper, he has very kind eyes, and I don't think he would have it in him to fight to the death, whereas I think the Mariners moose.
This is one of the softest looking mascots you've ever seen.
Dirty.
This is one of the softest looking mascots you've ever seen. If the Mariner moose can't beat Stomper.
He's got a short little trunk. He almost looks like a mouse. You know?
Yeah, this doesn't even look like an elephant.
Well, and then if you put a mouse by an elephant, the elephant will do everything to not step on it.
That's actually the
trick.
So
elephants are... They're just big softies.
Yeah. Exactly. Moose. Right. Mariner moose.
Okay, fine. This or that. Let's go with who ends up having a better day pitching battle. I'm feeling good about Marco.
I mean,
Marco's been good the last two times out.
Yeah, he has been. And we know that when Marco's feeling good, you know, his stuff might not be sexy, but he's feeling sexy up there, and that's all that matters. When he feels it, he's dealing. So I think that Marco, with these last two outings, has really kind of found his stuff and come into his own. And when he does that, he usually goes on a bit of a really good stretch here. So I feel confident in Marco.
This or that. This one is Mariners related, though not necessarily about this series.
Okay.
But it's from a listener, so I'm going to include it. This or that. Whose athleticism would you rather have? Julio or DK? My answer is DK.
Really?
It's not that I don't think Julio is exceptionally gifted. It's just that something about DK, like I would literally just go around and jump on things. I would jump up on tables. I would jump up on chairs. I would leap over tiny little parking fences. I can't fathom being able to just
DK,
jump over things.
DK is so incredibly strong.
That's what I'm saying.
Crazy.
It's like, and then you're 24 again, so you could eat whatever you want. I mean, with either one of these guys, your metabolism is just... It's not even the athleticism, it's the metabolism. That's what
I would be curious to know what Julio is like in other sports. Like, does his athleticism cross over into just like anything and everything?
More likely. This
right? Can he hoop? Can he throw a football?
What I'm going to ask
So I don't know, but I'm really impressed with Julio as an athlete. I'm gonna pick Julio.
What would be more likely? DK hitting a home run in an actual game?
No, DK can't even hit a softball. That's a fact.
Did you watch him
in the All-Star game last year?
No.
He struck out twice in a slow pitch softball game.
Oh, man. Okay, I'll take Julio.
So what were you going to say?
The other one was going to be Julio with, like, a, I don't know, like a 40-yard touchdown.
Oh, Julio Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah. Julio.
Easily.
Do we know that Julio can catch a football?
I don't know, but we should find out.
It's a lot easier to catch a football than it is to hit
a Julio run. Is fast, man. I mean, I don't know. I'd be curious. I'd love to throw.
It's a lot easier
I'd love to throw
anything.
With Julio. Just have him run a couple routes and see what he looks like. I could tell you in five throws if he could do it.
If he's got it.
Yeah.
This or that, who makes the playoffs first, also from a listener, Seahawks or Mariners?
I mean, I would have said Mariners. Right now, I'm thrown through a loop.
I'm still going Mariners.
Are you?
Yeah, because I don't think the Seahawks. I think the Seahawks would be fortunate to get a winning record this year.
I don't say
that negatively. I almost like am looking at it as a multi-year step forward.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I'll still pick Mariners here because I although this season is not gone off to the start that they've wanted, I do expect them to turn it around to a certain degree. And it doesn't necessarily take them off of their track. Like I still think that 2023 can be a very positive year for them in terms of the offseason that they can have and continual development for their young players. So I'll say that the Mariners are farther along in their rebuild or their turn or whatever you want to call it.
Curtis, you let out a deep sigh when I asked that question.
It's just both teams right now are just in the doldrums.
But
I'll take the Mariners, but not feeling super confident.
You could argue both teams are at interesting rebuilding points.
Sure, that's one way to spin it.
Curtis is still down bad, guy. He's
really down.
He's back and he's ready to let out some steam.
You know what is good though?
What's that?
My family's back.
Oh, that's good, Jake.
My family
that sounds a lot worse than my family left me, guys.
Yeah.
Now they're back.
In my mind, they did.
Well, when you walked in, Curtis, you weren't here. We obviously had a guest producer in for the day, Brady, who had no context. And Brady said, "Jake, how's it going?" And Jake said, "Oh, my family left."
Wow. What do you
Brady
say?
Brady had
to that?
No clue what
Poor
to say.
Guy.
He just stared at him. He was like,
I wanted to see what his reaction would be, and he did nothing.
No, he did. No, I don't think so.
Yeah. Brady's I don't have time for this. I'm here to do my job.
All right. It's been Jake and Stacey. For Jake Heaps, for Curtis Rogers, I'm Stacey Ross. Don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bob coming your way next.